nothing is more expensive than bad information. Know the source. OneRadioNetwork.com.
Well, a very pleasant good morning to you. Welcome to part two of our little show. It is June 2nd, 2020, and we had a lot of conversations about mandatory vaccines, and I suspect we'll get into that in our next segment here as we talk to a friend and a longtime vet for Doodle and Bria and my doggies, and is Dr. Will Faulkner, and a holistic veterinarian, mainly with homeopathy out of Austin, but he's been in India for some time, and it's about 11 o'clock at night, getting ready for bedtime in India. Dr. Faulkner, good evening to you.
Hi, Patrick.
How you doing? What you doing there in India? What's going on?
Well, I moved here. I'm officially no longer roots in Austin anymore. I moved here to be closer to my spiritual path.
So is that right?
This is my new digs. Yeah.
New digs in India. My goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when did this happen, the move?
July, last July.
Oh, it's been that long. I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm coming up on a year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet I'm every bit as much online, or almost as much online, so it's really not changed a whole lot. You know, I'm still putting out a newsletter every couple of weeks, and a blog now and then, and, you know, check in on people here and there, and have a regular meeting with my people who subscribe to my homeopathy training, that sort of thing. So
yeah,
it's not a whole lot different.
But you do a whole lot of things with homeopathic remedies that we've used for Doodle and Bria when she was around. Are you still able to do that with the people? Can you send them from there, from India?
Well, I'm not shipping, but what I'll have them do, I've just kept a handful of clients, and I haven't taken new patients for some years now, but I'll have them go to a homeopathic pharmacy. They're all over the internet, you know, so if you're in the States and you need a remedy, I can tell you what it is and what potency to get and what size pellets to get. Go here and get it, and they'll pick it up, and I'll tell them how to give it.
Mm-hmm.
So it still works just fine.
And how do you determine, and if you're interested, folks, in doing the heartworm thing without drugs, Dr. Faulkner has extended a little kind of celebration program that he put together, because 40 years as a veterinarian, go figure. They said it wouldn't last, but he's proven them wrong. Just kidding. Just kidding. And you have a chance till midnight tonight to sign up for that and do the heartworm thing that we'll get into on a course, and we'll have the link right on the show page. I forgot where I was going to go before. I was sorry. I just lost my train of thought when I said the course. So the mandatory vax that we have for dogs and cats right now, is it correct in the United States? Is it correct that there's the only thing that's mandatory, Dr. Faulkner, is the rabies?
Yeah, that's the only one that has any law about it. And it's what's called a colorable law. I don't know if any of your guests have gotten into the difference between colorable law and statutory law, but it's quite significant.
Mm.
Colorable means it's kind of patched together by, semi-governing bodies. It doesn't have much weight. And turns out when we did some FOIA, Freedom of Information Act research on it, a colleague of mine out of Florida found that in his county it was put together when there was zero cases of rabies. It wasn't an epidemic by any means. There were no cases in dogs and none in cats. And the couple of vets got together, and a legislator helped them get a law passed that said you've got to do this every 3 years or every year back in the day. And so states vary between, 1 year and 3 years. But the bottom line is there's no science behind that repetitious rabies vaccine at all. So another course different than this heartworm one that's out right now is helping people to get over that hump of, how to get out of that law that can harm their animal and not have any basis in helping them. So that's a can of worms. But yeah, it's a mandatory thing. There's some more enlightened states, Delaware, I think, or Connecticut, I think it was more recently, passed a law that said your veterinarian can write you a waiver if your animal is deemed ill and a vaccine would be harmful.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's a really potent law, and that's a good thing to have on the books. And I urge people who want to change their state's laws to contact the Delaware people and see how they've done it, and maybe they can, you know, kind of make up a carbon copy of that and get it through. Hmm. There's a lot of states that just say we'll put our foot down. You can't get a waiver of any kind. We don't trust an antibody titer test. You know, if you take blood from an animal and see that there's a whole lot of antibodies for this disease, like rabies, therefore your animal is likely immune. Let's not get another shot. A lot of states just poo-poo that and say, no, we don't trust that. So it's pretty, you know, it's fairly devious and it's fairly hard-nosed in a lot of states, but it's state by state. It's not a nationwide thing.
Off of the top of your head, are you familiar, since we have listeners all over the world, are you familiar with the states that are the most pet vaccine friendly other than Delaware?
It was Connecticut, actually. That was the one that just did the good deed, but mm-hmm. I'm not really. Okay. It's something you can look up on the net, I'm sure, mm-hmm. and find out. There's about, I think out of the 50 states, the last count I had, there were close to half or maybe a little more than half that would allow a waiver of some sort. And the trouble with waivers is if you're coming as a beggar to a legislature, you know, to say, please let my dog get by without this.
Yeah.
The odds are you're giving your power away to them and saying, you know, I don't know anything about this. You guys are in control. And a lot of times they'll make you leap through hoops and come back every year to do it again and again, you know, to say, you need to get another waiver next year and the year after that and the year after that. So typically people who learn enough about rabies to understand that duration of immunity, this length of it, of how long immunity lasts, is a very long time, probably lifelong after you've gotten immunized. That once you own that understanding that my dog's immune and he's a good citizen, he got shots when he was two and, mm-hmm. you know, he's now five and we titer tested him and he's still got antibodies. Then you start making other decisions and say, I'm going to keep my dog safe from the potential damage. You know, I was just on a Zoom call with my rabies course students. We just finished up a course, and somebody said, you know, I decided living in Texas that rabies is a risk. We only had our two German Shepherds vaccinated once, and we decided to give them a second one to make sure they're immune. And lo and behold, just like Dr. Falconer said, 30 days later, my 2.5-year-old Shepherd started scratching wildly and digging holes in his skin, these things called hot spots, all over his skin. And his personality changed. He used to get along famously with his younger brother, and now he's irritated by his presence. And the third thing was his appetite went south. He's no longer wanting to eat like he normally did. All that from one vaccine, and not immediately. It's very, very common to see the side effects of a vaccine about 30 days later for some reason. It's delayed. So now he's probably got a wildly allergic immune system, you know, looking at things kind of cross-eyed, you might say, and mm-hmm. reacting to a bite of a food that's a normal food stuff, or maybe a bite of a flea, which is a normal parasite. You know, everybody gets a flea now and then. And he's tearing his coat out. And now the younger dog who got it on the same day, they handed both dogs off, couldn't go in with him because of the COVID-19 business. Mm-hmm. He's only now about 2 weeks after the older dog. Neither one of them are very old, you know, 2.5 and 1.5. The younger guy is starting to scratch now as well. So that's the least worst, but rabies can go all the way up to creating vicious animals and creating seizures and having autoimmune disease as a result of getting a vaccine, especially an extra unnecessary one.
So
it's quite an issue.
So similar to what's going on in California with the kids, you're saying that there are states where you could get a doctor or vet to say, this animal's not in good enough health to do this, and get waivers. Could you get a waiver for the original one and never get a rabies, do you think?
Probably not.
Yeah.
You'd probably have to have something. But again, it would depend on your ownership of that decision and how, you know, how you run the tunnels. So
yes, sir.
I have people in my rabies course evaluate their risk of rabies first. First and foremost, how do you live? If you're in a high-rise apartment in New York City and you keep your animal in a purse, well, your odds of coming across a wildlife species that carries rabies is pretty remote.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're living in, you know, Hays County or Burney or somewhere where rabies is fairly busy and your dog runs 40 acres, well, that's a whole other risk scenario. So I teach people how to evaluate that risk, and the data is out there on the internet. You can see what the risk is in your county or in your province if you're in Canada.
So, Dr.
And then first decide, need to do it?
Yeah. Dr. Faulkner, so in your experience, 40 years at this, I hear you saying, I don't want to put words in your mouth, that there is some kind of a virus or a bacteria that has been called rabies that is out there circling around potentially with an animal that dogs can get and get sick or dying from it, and a vaccine protects the dogs from it?
Yeah, and it's been really well demonstrated, actually. The third world here in India and in Africa, they're still losing about 50 to 60,000 humans a year to this rabies virus.
Really?
Wow. It's carried in the western part of the world where we've vaccinated for the last 40 years. It's pretty much retreated to only wildlife species. So in Texas, that means bats and skunk and raccoon, and those are pretty much the three in most parts of the U.S. Over in India and Africa, it's dogs biting children, and children, you know, not realizing they've been bitten or not knowing good bite wound care, and the virus gets in, slowly crawls up the nervous system until it reaches the brain, and the child dies. So they've got volunteer veterinary organizations, from a lot of them from the UK, some of them from the US, that go to these pockets of villages and whatnot in India and Africa and vaccinate every dog they can catch. And they do it every year. And they vaccinate thousands of animals in a year and leave. And the incidence of rabies drops dramatically when they do that.
Interesting.
And the death rate drops. Yeah. So it's a real thing. Yeah. There's no question about it. And if you find an animal in your backyard that's acting crazy and it's the right species, you know, you've got a skunk that's out there in the middle of the day instead of nocturnal like they normally are, and you call the animal control, they'll test the brain of that animal and look for what they call Negri bodies. And they'll see these things that are only there in an animal who's got the rabies virus in. And most of them that they test are negative, but the ones that have it are, you know, 4 to 5% of all the ones they test. And they were acting that way because the rabies virus affected their brain.
Interesting.
So it's a very real disease. They call it a neglected tropical disease because, you know, we've kind of beaten it in the West. And and in these areas like India and Africa, they've just, you know, not thrown enough money at it and effort at it.
So if we... What year do you recommend we do the rabies? Two-part question. What year? And there are ways, I think, homeopathically that you can talk about to minimize the ill effects. And I think it's also possible, because I got one for Doodle, to get a rabies vaccine that's clean without mercury, correct?
Well, they've got one that's labeled that way.
Oh, I thought I did.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Did I?
It's never really free of it. So they've got this thing in all vaccines called the excipients.
Yes.
And the excipients is like a patented, nobody has to tell you what it is, kind of bunch of ingredients that goes into the making of mostly vaccines, but some drugs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that if you give it to a chemist and say, you know, give it to Adams or something and run it through a lab of somebody who's looking for mercury, they'll still find it in this ones that are called thimerosal free.
Mm-hmm. So much like the kids vaccines, right? Much like the kids vaccines.
Yeah, very much like it. Excipients are in there, so it can hide in there.
So what year and what
protocols? If you're in a risk area,
yeah.
Yeah, the age to start, if you're in a you've evaluated your area to be at risk for rabies, and your lifestyle is such that an animal could contact a wild animal who carries rabies could contact your animal, your domestic animal. The best age to start is after 16 weeks. Then all of mom's antibodies from her colostrum are gone, and there's no interference with the vaccine at that age. So typically the regimen, because it's a killed vaccine virus, is you give one at that age, 16 weeks, 4 months old, and you repeat it at the year birthday when the dog turns a year. And the reason they give two is a killed vaccine isn't a very good immunizing agent. And that's why they add aluminum and stuff to kind of pepper up the reactivity of it. And you just don't get as much reactivity as you do with what they call a modified live vaccine, which is a live vaccine, and it reproduces, but it doesn't cause the disease. It's modified in such a way that it doesn't cause the actual disease. So one at 4 months, one at a year, and then you should run what's called a titer test just to see how you've done. Maybe 3 or 4 weeks after that, you get a blood sample. If your vet is, you know, in the dark about what titer tests are, you can look up protectthepets.com. My colleague, Dr. John Robb, is out there in Connecticut and will run it for you. All you need to do is send him a tube of blood, and he'll give you the lowdown on whether your animal converted and made an immune response that's a worthy immune response or not. They can measure that. And if you've got an immune response at that point, the odds are that dog's going to be immune to rabies for at least 5 years, probably more like 7 or even 9.
And then if you did a titer at 7 or 9, if it shows up any kind of a level, you're still good? And then...
True. Although the legislatures won't buy that. So there's the rub. You know, you know that your animal's made immunity by testing later on and saying, yeah, there's a waning titer, perhaps. It's less than it was, but it's still showing. The acid test is that first titer after a month of the month after the second shot. If you've got a good, strong titer at that point, the odds are you've got a lot of years of immunity. And it doesn't vary. You know, some vets will blow smoke and say, well, if I test it tomorrow, it's going to be gone. I test it 3 days from there, it could be back. It wobbles all over the place. It does not. It's a very long-lasting antibody that stays there in the blood. At a certain point, if enough years go by, that titer will drop. The antibody level it's not necessary to keep making antibodies for something you never see in nature. So it'll drop. But that doesn't necessarily mean the immunity is gone. And there's a really good research study on that came out of Kansas State, where they do all the titer testing for dogs. And they found these animals were out of date by some of them 2 years. And they got exposed to a potentially rabid bite, you know, a raccoon or a skunk bit their animal. The standard procedure then is to get them another vaccine and observe them. You know, quarantine them and observe them and make sure they're not going to get rabies from that bite. But they'll titer test them as well. And lo and behold, the ones who were out of date on their rabies vaccines had a much stronger immune response to that next vaccine than the ones who were up to date. So even though their titers had dropped to a minimal level at this time of exposure, they said, oh, we better vaccinate your dog to make sure he doesn't get this rabies. And the titer just jumped up like a in a heartbeat.
Interesting. So I've never really heard you talk about two. You say the 16 weeks and then a year. Is this something new, or did I miss that?
Well, it's a little bit of a. It's been that way for a long time in conventional medicine. They've always said two because it's been a killed vaccine since I think the 80s or so when I graduated. But
do you agree with that?
A lot of,
I'm sorry. What's that? Do you agree with that? The two?
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. Yeah. If you're in a place where it's a risk, I do.
Okay.
So you'll hear the term once and done for other vaccines, and those are those modified live vaccines. So if you give a distemper vaccine, you decide, you know, distemper is a risk in your area, and you're going to give a distemper to a pup. You can do that once after the age of probably 12 weeks or 14 weeks and count that to, because it's live and it reproduces in the animal for a time before it plays out and dies, that immunity will be a stronger immunity, and you can probably get a long-lasting year's worth, several years' worth, if not lifetime immunity, out of one. But that's not the case with rabies because it's a killed vaccine.
Dr. Will Faulkner is here. Doc, stay right there. Don't fall asleep on us. You okay? holistic veterinarian. He's in India, where it's about 11 o'clock or who knows, 12:30 at night. And if we have some really good emails coming in, let's do a quick break, and then we will walk you through how you can, through today, if you'd like to get involved with Dr. Faulkner's little course on how to do the whole heartworm thing without drugs, which can be dangerous, and we'll talk about that, and we'll do it all and take your emails after we do. We're going to brush our teeth and have a good time. Hang in.
Did you know the DNA of the pearl and we humanoids are very similar? Did you know that?
The DNA that's responsible to create the pearl is very similar to how our human calcium metabolism is done. So it's very, very interesting. That's why the pearl is so good for our skins, for our bones, for even to rejuvenate our bone marrows, rejuvenate our bones, and rejuvenate our skins, and also nerve systems, you know, joints, all kind of muscles, and like eyesight, our eyes is a big muscle, basically, and also our heart. It's very good for the heart.
It's quite interesting that she mentioned the pearl works to build the bone marrow. And in Ayurveda medicine, they've often talked about the idea when you build the bone marrow is when you build beauty and longevity. Curious. Pearl, this is a great product. You can brush your teeth with it. And in my opinion, you'll see amazing results on your toothies. Really amazing. You can take it internally, mix it with face cream. Our link on One Radio Network goes to a two-pack where you get a great discount. But if you only want one to start, just click around and you get yourself one. Pearl Sim, click on the ad on front page, OneRadioNetwork.com.
And because our trademarkers know the source, these are once living things. We like to always promote as best as we can of once living things that work in the body. And pearls are really living tears of oysters. That's right. The oysters, they watch sad movies and they cry and they make pearls. And I just made the part up about sad movies, but they do cry. And Pearl Sim on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Previously, we were talking with Brandon about the Blue Shield EMF device, and he says it goes out 90 yards in all directions.
It's an omnidirectional field that, if you think about a huge sphere that's expanding, that's essentially what the waveform pattern looks like.
Oh, that's cool. So it's putting frequencies into the body. And then how does that work in relation to electromagnetic field that's coming in the walls and the windows through a cell phone tower down the street?
Yeah, so the cell repeaters and Wi-Fi and all this electromagnetic radiation in the environment, people mistakenly think that this is somehow going to act like a shield and block the radiation and make it not appear on any kind of tri-field meter or any measuring device. And that's simply not the case. It's more of an energy medicine, so to speak, where it's stimulating the bodies at the cellular level to create a cellular response to make all the individual cells much stronger and more able to adapt to the EMF stressors. So that's number one on the physical or the somatic level, where the body's experiencing a decrease in stress from electromagnetic fields.
If you're interested, you can click on the Blue Shield ad on the front page of One Radio Network. Use promo code One Radio, or also contact Brandon through his website there when you click, and he'll give you more information. Front page, Blue Shield EMF protection device on OneRadioNetwork.com.
We're receiving some emails, and Brandon is, and I'm going to have to talk to him and get updated about the Blue Shield and the potential to protect from 5G if you're in the city and they're going to put these guys down the street from you. Who knows where this is all going. And I don't believe, I could be wrong, that there's never really been any really controlled, double-blind kind of test to prove that these things are going to help your body to withstand 5G. It's just too new. And these kind of tests really take a long time anyway, just like we can't kind of fudge it on the natural thing, just like we
don't want the vaccine people to fudge it either. But they've done the studies with animals in Australia. This technology has been going on for many, many years, and they've certainly shown in the chickens that they have better mortality rate, and they're happier, and they lay more eggs and lose less feathers and stuff when exposed to Wi-Fi. So we know it works for Wi-Fi cell phone towers in animals anyway. So we just do what we can. They're a little not terribly expensive. So, you know, I certainly have one, and you can also get one, a little credit card thing that you can carry and juice it up with a USB on your computer. So we do what we can. You know, we trust in God and tie up our camel. We do what we can with the 5G stuff. So that's the latest we have on it. But as we find out more, we'll let you know.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Dr. Will Faulkner is with us, a homeopathic vet. His website is vitalanimal.com. And so what you did for your 40-year anniversary as a vet, you did a little special on heartworms, right? And how to do the whole thing without doing drugs. And you've extended that just for another day.
It's kind of a double graduation. So I'm just passing the 40-year anniversary from graduating from vet school, and this is a chance for people to graduate out of the neurotoxins that are called heartworm drugs. So we hear about prevention, heartworm prevention, but really what it is you're giving a toxin every month, either on the shoulders of the dog or commonly they're given as a treat. Smart dogs will spit them out or vomit and, you know, don't feel so good after you get them, but other ones will just wolf it down. And there's the potential for side effects there that are quite serious. So when we say prevention, you'd think, well, that's just keeping the thing completely out of my dog. Well, not true. The way these drugs work is they get in, assuming that your dog may have some larvae in its bloodstream, and it paralyzes those larvae. So hence the name neurotoxin. It's a pesticide. And you can never just really imagine that a little bit of poison every month would make your dog healthier, would you? I mean, what universe would you have to live in to think that that equation works? So years and years ago, and heartworm was a year-round thing, I started to think, you know, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be some way to build up the animal's natural resistance so that parasites, which are, you know, weaklings in the invader world, you know, they take advantage of the weakened host. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a way to make these animals stronger so they can resist parasites of all kinds, including heartworm. And I came up with this protocol that, you know, addresses several different areas of building natural resistance without products, really, more with just management decisions that anybody can make at home. And later on added a couple products for those people who like to give something, you know, as an option. But lo and behold, people that started following it back there in Hawaii and then when I moved to Texas in 94, they said, you know, hallelujah, I've got a negative heartworm test. And they keep telling me that year after year, and we have a little high five on email together. And we're now probably 30 years into that and hundreds of dogs. So what I did for this 40th anniversary is let people graduate from their toxic monthlies to a non-toxic drug-free protocol. And we put it on sale for a stout price off. And the link that I've set up for your folks is just vitalanimal.com/Patrick.
Okay.
And we're going to keep it open an extra, it's probably morning your time. So it's going to stay open till midnight today, Tuesday. We officially closed it yesterday at midnight, but because I was going to be on here and I wanted to give your people a chance to get in, we extended it to midnight tonight at Tuesday. So that link will get you the details and you can see what's in the special for you, and both save some money and save your animals some potential toxicity.
And you've shown clinically over the years that when folks do their little blood test for heartworms, we have a lot of negative tests. And does it always work?
I'm actually encouraging people to get the test every spring, which is when you would do it even if you were using the drugs. And not surprisingly, you know, the drugs are getting resistance built up to them. So even people who do the drug should test every spring, and some of them are going to come back positive. But I regularly get emails from people all over the place, from Florida, where they say the mosquitoes are big enough to haul your small dog off, and Texas, where we've got plenty, and Hawaii, where it's a year-round risk, saying, yep, I'm on my fourth year now of negative dogs. I've got one of my coaches lives up in North Texas, and she says, well, we're going on 11 years now. We've got negative tests year over year, and I know 20 other people in my area up near Dallas that are doing the same protocol, and they're all negative. So, yeah, it's getting verified on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Before we go to the emails, and we have lots, too. Wow, you're a popular guy. what about all the other little baby, puppy little vaccines they want to give? What are some of them? You know them, right? Three or four?
Well, there's two that are, yeah, there's typically a combination shot that's given that's a five-way or sometimes a seven-way, but there's really only two or three if you're in a rabies area that are worth paying attention to. And it's hard to find them all alone. One is parvo, which is a diarrheal disease that can kill pups. And parvo's ubiquitous. It's everywhere dogs are, so it's pretty easy to get. And the other is distemper, which is more rare, more of a risk if you're probably down in the south of Texas and some other pockets around the states, but you don't hear much about distemper these days. We pretty well wiped it out. Those two, you can, turns out, get a natural immunity to, and avoid this five or seven way vaccine that's loaded with all sorts of other stuff that you don't need, lepto and parainfluenza, and
you don't need those
unnecessary stuff. Nah. Some of them will throw in a coronavirus for a puppy diarrhea that's never killed a pup, I don't think, in its entire existence. And just another way to pad the pocketbooks.
So why do we build the natural immunity with diet?
Well, yeah, partly. But I mean, if people just go to vitalanimal.com and find a search box on the articles page, any article will have mm-hmm. a search box over on the right, and just type in parvo, you'll bring up an article that tells how to expose that pup at a sequential weekly basis at a very short interval at a place like a dog park or a pet store, and get a metered exposure to the real world. Nose and mouth, paws on the ground, that kind of a thing.
I'll be.
And doing that 3 weeks in a row, this was worked out by a colleague of mine in Connecticut also, who did this for puppy owners who didn't want to go through a bunch of vaccines, but did want to get an immunity to parvo and distemper. And after 3 weeks of this short exposure, on the fourth week, they'd go in and get a titer, and their titers would be off the charts, meaning their antibodies were there for parvo and for distemper.
Really?
And yeah, that's a far better immunity than injecting it into a little body. They've got it through the nose and through the mouth, and they got it in such a small dose, a short interval exposure, that it's very safe. Nobody got sick from it.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, you can get a natural immunity that way.
Same theory with...
Living in the world.
Yeah, same theory with... They tell moms with their babies, is let them get them out there and run around the dirt and go to the playgrounds.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Same idea.
Yeah.
Why doesn't that work with rabies or parvo? Or it does... It does. Parvo it does.
Parvo it does. Rabies, it's different because rabies is only transmitted via saliva of a rabid animal.
I see.
So not any animal, but a rabid animal who's about to die of rabies has this, can't swallow anymore, so the saliva just falls out. The saliva is laden with virus. They can see it on a scanning electron microscope. And it's an amazing, piece of biology. The virus gets to the brain. It reproduces in the brain, and then it settles down into the salivary glands right below the brain, around the mouth, and it's there ready to be transmitted to the next victim. And because it's in the brain, it changes the behavior of the rabid animal such that their bite inhibition is gone, or they're actually aggressive. You'll see, animals who will attack others when they're experiencing rabies. The bite happens, the puncture wound carries the saliva with the virus in, and off it goes to the next animal. So you can't get a natural exposure to rabbit saliva because it's just not out there. And the only way to get, you know, the actual exposure is through a puncture wound or something. You don't want to chance that.
Yeah.
The reason we go to all this trouble for rabies is because humans die of it.
Yeah.
See, humans don't die of parvo and distemper.
So in theory, you're in an apartment in New York or somewhere. The rabies shot is just not necessary. I mean, what's the chance?
Yeah.
Unless your dog's running around getting rats in New York, and a lot of rats and dirty rats.
Yeah, but they don't carry it.
Oh, they don't carry it?
It's not a host.
No, really? No. Interesting. Oh.
The rodents don't carry it, yeah. It's the skunk and the raccoon and the bat. And in Texas, the bat is the number one species, but how many bats? You know, we've got thousands and tens of thousands of them. Maybe 5% of the ones that are tested, meaning they've fallen on the ground and they can't get up again.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that get tested. Only 5% of those are positive. We just looked at the data for one of my students the other day.
So still
it's there,
pretty small odds.
They're not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the odds are still really in your favor that you won't get it.
A lot of bats in Texas. Is there any more rabies than in Texas than anywhere else?
Yeah, rabies is an issue in Texas. And you can pull up a map from the state, I think the abbreviation is DS, Department of Health Services, basically, in Texas. And if you search on the term rabies incidence, you know, what's the number of rabies in Texas, they'll show you year by year where they are, and they'll color code the counties of Texas to tell you where they are. You can do that in any state or any province, actually. They keep close record of that because it's a human transmissible disease.
I see.
So you can assess your risk pretty easily, about, 5-10 minutes on the internet.
Let's do some emails.
Look over a few years and see.
Let's have some fun. You ready? Okay.
Sure.
Here we go. This is Jane, Toronto, Ontario. For Dr. Falconer, any natural homemade sprays for ticks and mosquitoes for dog? He has a few health issues, and I don't want to use the chemicals. He is fed commercial raw, but two ticks are already on him. Had to take it off with the tick removal. So she's in an area, and natural ticks and mosquito things?
Yeah, there are several. You know, the repellent essential oils, you'd want to find good quality repellent oils. Like I used to make a mix years ago. You dilute them, of course. You know, you'd never put them on full strength because they can be very powerful. Things like tea tree and what else do we used to use? Oregano is a pretty strong oil. And the ones that lavender is a good repellent. You put a mix of a few of these together with maybe one part of the oils to nine parts of a carrier oil like coconut oil, and you could rub it in the skin before going out. In Texas, and actually they ship probably all over the place, if you go to my site and go to non-toxic flea control, there's a bootstrap company in Texas that was on Shark Tank a couple of years ago called Wonderside. And they use cedar oil, natural cedar oil from the cedar trees around the hill country and whatnot. And that's been a really potent, not only repellent of ticks, but actually kills them naturally without harming the dog, without harming the animal.
Wonderside, yeah.
So there's a product available called Wonderside.
Yeah, that's a nice product. It smells good, too, right? It kind of smells good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of smells good.
They've got a few different scents of it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of smells like your cat chest or your dog walked out of the little cedar chest when you had your sweaters over the years. Smells like that. So do you use Wonderside on kitties, too, cats?
I'm cautious about it still. You know, they're more sensitive to things than dogs are generally. So I'll tell people to... You know, the reports back from the company are all green light, but I tell people start with a small spot, and test it and make sure the cat doesn't go into conniptions and start licking it and drooling and all that sort of stuff.
Well,
and
as you know,
if they're okay with, maybe one leg done or half a leg done,
just kind of
try
easing
a bigger area.
Well, as you know, Doc, being around 40 years with animals, cats are from a whole other planet, so it's not fair to categorize.
They are.
Definitely. I think they're from Pluto or something.
Hey, this is from Abby. She's listening on Facebook this morning. My vet recommends lepto vaccines because we live in deer country. Am I hearing you saying that this could not be necessary?
Yeah, it's a great question. Lepto, among the vaccines, has been one of the worst in terms of side effects, Abby. So I don't recommend it at all. And again, it's an issue of, at the very heart of things, how healthy is your animal? And how likely is he to be exposed to standing water where lepto might be shed by rats and such? But it's waterborne disease. So again, it depends on your lifestyle. If the animal is not well, he's had a lot of shots and he's down on his health and maybe he's eaten less than sterling food, and you live near a swamp and he drinks the swamp water, maybe you would think about giving lepto. But that's just gotten horrible marks all around the natural pet communities. You know, search around on probably right there on Facebook for lepto problems in dogs, and you'll find a slew of them.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Rick is in London, New York. Dr. Faulkner, anything can I do for a dog that had high post-acid bile? Wow. Results. Any food can also add high alt liver enzymes. He is on Denosyl and milk thistle, D-E-N-O-S-Y-L, and milk thistle. No symptoms for raw. Wondering also if raw is okay to fed with liver issues. So let's see if we understand. It's not very well written. Kind of work on your English, folks. Help me out here. Dr. Faulkner, anything can I do for a dog that had high post-acid bile results?
Yeah, it's sounding like there's some liver problems in the dog. So I definitely get with your holistic vet on that and tailor a diet that is gentle to the liver. And generally, you want proteins that are very well easily digested. So a raw diet is more easily digested than a cooked one.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to keep the organ meats fairly low. So they're more of a challenge to the digestive system. They're rich, you know, they're potent. And have a counselor on your side that helps to make that diet, you know, work for a liver animal. You can consult some books like maybe Dr. Pitcairn's Complete Guide for Natural Health for Dogs and Cats. Several others are out there. But it sounds like you're on a couple of good helpers. The Denosyl and the Silymarin are both helpers for the liver.
Yeah. That's a Silymarin is a little form of milk thistle, right? One of the key ingredients of milk
thistle. Correct.
And what's the other one, Denosyl? Yeah.
Denosyl, I think, has Silymarin in it.
Oh, I see. So that
is
so.
Brand name.
So dogs do good with these little herbs, right? They do good.
Yeah, I mean, if the dog's been on it for a long time and isn't making progress, you know, probably the next step would be to hire a homeopathic vet,
mm-hmm.
and they're gonna find homeopathic remedies that fit your specific dog and his constellation of symptoms, and then work that way to get a little deeper response. Again, on my site, if you search on resources or recommended resources, I tell you, I've actually got a video on how to choose a good one, whether they're close to you or far away, doesn't matter.
So it's vitalanimal.com, right? Vitalanimal.com.
Yeah.
Are there resources for people around the world listening to find holistic and or homeopathic vets? Are there websites?
Yes. My vitalanimal.com, if you go to recommended resources,
okay.
Again, the search box will just find it if you type in resources.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a list there of both international vets who are homeopathic and U.S., you know, Canadian U.S. ones. And I've actually made a video on how to choose one, whether you're going to work by telephone long distance or lucky enough to have someone in your neighborhood. So that's right on that page. It's a real handy reference. Mm-hmm.
Here's an email from Kay. She is in California. My 10-month-old puppy has only had her 5-way puppy shot before I got her at 2 months old. I'm resisting getting any other vaccines, including the rabies, even though I live in California and it's kind of required, in quotes. I feel balanced. I feed a balanced raw diet. I don't take her
to the vet for checkups, and she has just been spayed by a holistic veterinarian. He gave me a choice whether to get the rabies or not, but he didn't go into detail. Is a single shot required for antibodies just in case? If so, would be the best time to give it? I don't want to damage my dog.
Yeah, again, I would assess your risk first. That's the first thing you want to do. So how busy is rabies in your county? You can drill down and find that for the last decade. If it's not a big risk in your county and you have identified the species that are there, and you determine that your lifestyle is such that your dog isn't going to run up against one of these species very likely, he's in your control, you know, you don't see these species around you, you're not beating about the bush, you can probably get away without giving any. If you decide it is a risk, then you need to give two to get an immunity. So we talked about being a killed vaccine. That's the only choice in rabies. It takes two to make an immunity for an animal who's at risk for rabies. So 10 months old is fine to start. You could give one at 10 months if you determine the risk is there, and give another one a month or two later.
What if you had dog 7, 8, or 9 and you wanted to do another rabies because you were in a risky area? Just go ahead and do that?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, there's a single one. If there's a history in the background of giving it before, a single one will boost it.
Are there things we can do homeopathically or nutritionally before, during, and after the rabies to help mitigate any potential damages?
Yeah, I like to give them transfer factor before and after. We've just come out with a new product that is high potency transfer factor, much higher than you'd find in colostrum, for instance. And I also, if you work with a homeopathic vet, you can ask the homeopathic vet if they'd give what's called a vaccine tautode, something I teach in another course called Nosodes, Tautodes, and Titers, where the remedy is made from the vaccine itself and given before and after the vaccine. Seems to, this doesn't follow homeopathic theory, it's not classical homeopathy, but it seems to cut down the chances of a bad reaction.
And what's that word, vaccine tautode?
Tautode, yeah, T-A-U-T-O-D-E, tautode. A tautode is just a homeopathic preparation of a drug, or in this case, a vaccine. So it's very safe, it's given orally. With the ultra dilution, there's nothing physical there, it's just energetic. And giving it before and giving it after seems to help.
There's places in New Zealand, Australia, and even in this country where they're doing homeopathic kind of vaccines for kids and all that. And has that gained any steam in this country to just do the whole thing homeopathically for these little doggy diseases?
Sure. Yeah, there are nosodes for diseases. Nosodes are homeopathically prepared products made from disease discharges. So we have them for kennel cough. They work fabulously in kennels that give them in the water, and they want to do it the natural way, and they don't say, you know, everybody who comes to my kennel, they have to have a kennel cough shot. I want to do it naturally. We'll put it in the water, and they prevent kennel cough that way. Or you can do it individually at home. There are parvo nosodes and distemper nosodes. And again, you need a homeopathic vet usually to get a hold of those. I've got them on my website. You can get those pretty easily.
You can
search on those words.
Oh, I see. On your website, we can buy those over the counter, the nosodes?
Yeah. Yeah, those are fairly straightforward.
Cool. And those are no risk?
No risk. No. The question of efficacy has not been well measured, but again, we've got use over a number of decades and just not a lot of hard data, but it seems like they're working.
Uh-huh. Do they have a nosode for rabies?
They do, but here's the rub. A nosode only gives a short-term immunity. So if we're using homeoprophylaxis, is what it's called.
Yeah, homeoprophylaxis.
In a growing pup, we only do that for the first 9 months of their life. After that, their immune system is mature, and they're on their way. So in that risky area where they're growing a strong immune system and they could be exposed to parvo, we give parvo twice a week, and on the other week we give distemper nosode twice a week. And we keep repeating alternate weeks until the dog reaches 9 months, knowing that exposure could come at any time. Well, with rabies, how do you know when exposure is going to come?
Yeah.
You don't. You know, a skunk could rush up and bite a 9-year-old dog just as likely as it could bite a puppy. And you don't give any homeopathic remedy year in and year out, day in and day out. You know, that's not good medicine. So it's not practical. There is one. And I think the place to give it would be if you're volunteering to come to India or Africa to vaccinate a bunch of dogs and you're at risk for contacting rabies. I would sure take the rabies nosode. It's called Lysin, L-Y-S-S-I-N.
And how long does it last? How long
does
it last?
Not applicable.
How long does it last, Lysin?
Any nosode will probably give an immunity that is less than 2 weeks.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Does it help the immune?
It's a short-term thing. You take it when there's a no exposure.
No exposure. Can the Lysin actually help the body to build natural immunities, or is it just a kind of a more symptomatic thing or a short-term deal?
Natural immunity, but short-term. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of misinformation out there on the internet about nosodes. They'll say, well, I gave a 30C weekly for 4 weeks, and then I gave a 200C, which is a higher potency, monthly for a couple of months. And then I gave a 1M, which is a big whopping dose, and I'm done for the year. Well, no, you're not. It's, you know, you're done for maybe 2 weeks after that 1M, and then your dog is at risk again.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's not like rabies is on every street corner, you know? So,
right. Yeah.
You know, it's a
got it.
Case-by-case basis.
This is from Lim. What remedy to ease and root out constant licking of all four paws? Most of the hair has been licked off in this unprecedented wet spring resulting in longer grass chemical-free. 11-year-old terrier has not been inoculated with any vaccine since 2 years. Oh, 2 years ago. Okay, they were vaccinated 2 years ago. Yeah. So that could be tied in with the licking.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem. And there isn't a remedy. There is a remedy for your dog. And the best way to get that cured is to hire a homeopathic vet. What your dog has is called chronic disease, meaning there's itchy, allergic skin, probably. Mm. And sometimes it affects the feet. Sometimes it's the rear end. Sometimes it's the ears, which ache and itch and smell bad. And all that stuff can be cured, but not do it yourself. There's not a remedy for itchy skin. There's 200 of them, and they won't all work.
Wow. And is it the live viruses or adjuvants, excipients, or all of the above that induces the immune system to get kind of wacky with the and precipitate licking and stuff?
Yeah, it's the injection of foreign viruses in a completely unnatural route and usually in a combination of several at a time. So that would never in the world happen in nature, right? You'd get exposed to one virus. COVID's going around now. You get exposed to that. You wouldn't expect to be exposed to five other things at the same time.
Right, yeah.
Nor would you be expected to get it, you know, injected into your bloodstream. So that's what happens that just breaks all the natural rules. And I call it immune confusion is the net result. You know, the immune system goes, we've been invaded at the deepest level and we had no warning. And now we've got five things that are circulating around everywhere they want to go and we had no chance to make a response. Damn it.
Yeah.
So they'll start turning on the allergies and the autoimmune disease at that point.
Holistic vet and homeopathic vet Will Faulkner is now living in India, vitalanimal.com. And he's done a special thing for us on this June 2nd day. So if you're, we'll get this posted on our website. Folks that'll want to do the heartworm kind of deal, he's got a nice little special on it. If you sign up before 50 midnight tonight. And so this heartworm medicine, this monthly thing, it's pretty rough stuff.
Yeah, it is. They're also immune-compromising chemicals. Ivermectin is one of the biggest ones out there. And boy, I used to get sick deworming horses with that back in the day when I first got started.
Ivermectin?
And I'd wear rubber gloves, and I'd wash my hands after I paste-wormed the horse with it, and I'd be driving to the next farm, and I'd start to get dizzy and nauseous. And I must have had all of three chemical or three molecules of the stuff in me.
Really?
Yeah, and it turns out the immune system can go haywire with these drugs as well. So you can get autoimmune disease from them. One of them that's big on the market is called Trifexis. You can get seizures from that. So they're not friendly.
Actually, I've known humans that have taken this ivermectin once a year for parasites. Not a probably Oof. Pretty tricky business, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it.
No.
Yeah.
Here's one from no first name. Does it reduce efficacy if two or three homeopathic medications are given simultaneously, then a small treat afterwards? Do tinctures like CBD oil work similarly, i.e. may it be given at the same time as maybe one or two homeopathic drops? And another third question, do you recommend milk thistle for detox and how much size? So he's got a few questions here. Can you do two or three homeopathic medications at the same time?
It's not good practice, no. The principles of homeopathy are based on finding the one best remedy to give at a time,
mm-hmm.
and then to judge the effect of that in that animal over a period of time and decide it based on that response what to do next. If that remedy's worked, then great. If it hasn't, then what's next, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's where you get a professional involved, especially if you're dealing with something chronic, meaning it's long-lasting. It's not, you know, like an injury.
Yes, sir. And the CBD, lots of people touting CBD for pets is good. Do you know any insights on that, CBD oil?
Yeah, I'm sure not an expert on it, but I have heard a lot of good things about it. I followed the Sacred Plant series a year or so ago that was out, and they had a segment or two on the animals in there. So you got to find somebody who knows their products well and who knows the dosage, because what seems to vary quite a bit is getting the dosage right and very safe. I've seen reports of good effects on behavior, good effects on quelling inflammation, several different things. So just get with somebody who knows their way around them and they should be fine.
Possible that it helps build immunity, CBD, or do we know?
I'm not sure I've heard that, Patrick.
Okay.
But,
And then his third point, I think we covered it, detox, milk thistle, silly marin. He just wants to know what's a reasonable dose.
Oh, not my forte, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But you can find one, I'm sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's probably safe at a lot of different levels. It's not a toxic thing at all.
Mm-hmm. D has a 7-week-old male kitten. Good for you. At approximately what age should I have him vaccinated for rabies? If I decide to do it at all, rabies will be his only vaccine, only one time if I do it. Approximately how long should I wait after the rabies vaccine to have him neutered? Well, that's a good question. So I'm not sure where she lives, but she wants to do the rabies, wants to know when. Do kitties get rabies shots?
Yeah. In fact, cats can get rabies just like dogs can.
Sure.
So if you're deciding that you're at risk for where you live and your lifestyle for the cat,
mm-hmm.
wait till 16 weeks minimum and then give another one at a year of age. If mm-hmm. you're going to do it at all, give two, 16 weeks or older, and then again at the year birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And how long after, what was the question?
Neutered, to be neutered.
Oh, to be neutered. Yeah, you don't want to do them together. That's a really good question. So it's convenience medicine that says we'll just do it all in one visit. So the animal's now under anesthesia, and they pick up the skin and drill in a bunch of shots at the same time because the animal's not going to bite them. That's not good practice. So I would put at least a month between those two events, maybe a couple of months. And I wouldn't neuter an animal before maturity. Sexual maturity in a cat's going to be somewhere around 7 months or can't tell if this is a male or a female, can you?
Yes, a male.
Okay, so you got time on your hands. Wait till he's mature, 7 months, 9 months, that sort of thing, and do the neutering then. So he's grown up with his hormones intact. He's got his bone structures and his musculoskeletal structures growing in balance. And his hormones serve him until, we don't want to deal with a spraying tomcat anymore.
Yeah.
So 7 months, 9 months, that sort of thing.
Similar then for the girls?
The tendency has been to do it young, you know, in the shelters they do it at ungodly young ages, and that just screws them up horribly, cats and dogs.
Hmm.
Incidence of cancer goes through the roof. The incidence of you know, the minimal is the dogs will have incontinent urine, you know, to a high degree, all sorts of problems.
And spaying for the girls, what's your general recommendations there?
If you can live with a couple of heats a year for a dog, I'd like to see them not spayed if you can live with that and prevent pregnancy. And that's just being a responsible owner. The data, if you look up the word neuter on vitalanimal.com in the search box, you'll find some strong data that suggests that cancer is much more of a risk in the neutered as are several other diseases. They're not on the tip of my tongue right now, but cancer's the big one, especially in golden retrievers. And if you're going to do it, you decide you've got to do it. Again, do it after the first heat. Just make sure they don't get pregnant on you on the first heat. You don't have unwanted pups to deal with. And they'll be fine to do after that maturity has set in. The biggest mistake is spaying at 2 months of age, which they can do surgically, but it's like instant menopause. The hormones are gone. They drop the bottom out, and these animals depend on those hormones to grow up in a healthy way.
Oh, I see. So you like them, let them go through heat one or two times.
Yeah, or maybe forever, you know.
Yeah, maybe, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, if you can live with a couple of weeks of heat twice a year, it's no big deal.
Robbie writes in, how often do you recommend titers? I live in Central Texas in a county requiring vaccines every year. Really? Do counties do that? I don't think so.
They can. There's pockets here and there where cities decide, municipalities decide, sometimes it's the state, and they can do whatever they want. So titers are often overdone. And if you get a positive titer at any age, what that tells you is your animal converted from the vaccine to being immunized. And that's likely going to last a long, long time. And testing the titer over and over again is a waste of money. You know that that animal converted, and you know that immunity to viruses lasts a long time. That's been borne out from research over the years. So if it's a rabies that you're concerned with, the odds are that's at least 5 years of immunity if you got a positive titer, and more likely 7 or even more. Mm-hmm. So no need to repeat them.
A couple more for you, then you get to go to bed, because what time is it there?
10 after 10.
10 after 10. Oh, strange. How could it be even after, well, whatever. Here's Vinny. He says, do you believe a diet a dog or cat eats needs to meet the recommendations or requirements set by the NRC or AAFCO in order for the animal to receive the nutrients it needs to be healthy with a strong immune system?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, the reason more people don't do homemade food or don't do even a healthy raw diet that they buy that someone else made is they're afraid that they've got to give, they look at the label of these AAFCO foods on the store shelf, and they see all these unpronounceable things in them. You know, they're things that you can't pronounce, things that you don't recognize. And it looks like that's the gold standard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I like people to compare to is if you've got a dog, think about a wolf. Very close ancestor, the dog is of the wolf. 99% genetic overlap in the mitochondrial DNA between the two species. Do wolves eat pyridoxine? Do they eat, these other unpronounceable things on a dog food label? No. Are they eating a balanced diet every meal? No. They balance over time, and they eat a wide variety of stuff. So they're not on a mono diet. Maybe they're eating caribou this month, and then the caribou play out, and they've got to turn to voles or, you know, rabbits in the snow or something. Their diet changes over time. So we can follow those same principles and know that balance over time is the norm in nature. And there's a lot written on that. You know, you can source through vitalanimal.com for some of that. Just look up wolf and you'll see a number of articles about the similarities. So I don't think those are hard and fast things that you need to worry about.
So the idea, I guess, of the Doc out of Australia, the barf, bones, and raw food mm-hmm. diet, with pretty good stuff,
yeah.
right? Their
yeah.
contention is, well, when the wolves eat the animals, they have some greens in there because the rabbit, you know, was grazing on grass. And so a little bit of greens is good for the people that haven't won a raw food diet or any kind of kibble, just some greens in there too?
A little bit, yeah. The people who study wolves show that they tear the entrails out and they spread them all over the ground. They don't consume them.
Really?
And so that's not part of the wolf's diet in any high degree at all. So you can do some. You can do some tripe, for instance, green tripe, which is a good source of probiotics, but it's a small amount, very small amount, 5% maybe.
Do you think it would be beneficial? They've got some really nice, say, grass-fed products now, dehydrated, beef organs and things like that. And also, I think you can get grass-fed, dehydrated tripe. Do you think the dehydrated can filter down to be some reasonable nutrition for a dog other than the real old raw liver or tripe?
Well, I would less trust the tripe, you know. You can buy what's called green tripe, which is stinky.
Yeah.
And it's full of probiotics. You'll know it because it smells so bad. It's not white. It's not bleached. But when you dehydrate that, how well is the flora, the microflora, surviving the dehydration process? That I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the odds are not so well.
So tripe in a can, which you can get, even organic, they claim organic, that's not going to have many probies because it's been cooked, right?
Right, right. The canning process will have killed them. So the place to get it is generally third world grocers, you know, where they're selling the raw stuff out of the goat or out of the cow. It looks like a netting, you know, it's a fore stomach of the cow. And the stuff you buy in off the grocery shelf is bleached, it's white, you know, so it doesn't smell. It's used in soups and whatnot, but there's no probiotics left in mm-hmm. that. There's a place in Texas, at least, and I think they do neighboring states, called Texas Tripe.
Huh.
And they deliver all over the place. And they've got raw food and do carry tripe. And so it's becoming more commonly available. People can find it.
Yeah. How important do you think, big overall, people wanting to do raw food and chicken and beef and turkey, and you can get these raw foods, of course, that to get it grass-fed, grass-finished, without the use of antibiotics in the moo cows and the chickens, how important is that? On, I'd say, on a scale of 1 to 10, would be the most important. What would your number be?
I put it way up there.
You know,
the thing that we're going to find out, a lot of Dr. Seneff's work is showing this, that glyphosate, the Roundup, is now following
yeah.
foodstuffs.
Yeah.
So if they're finishing these animals with grain, or they're they're not grass fed their whole life, which is pretty common, let's face it, then they're getting Roundup in them,
yeah.
and that's going to pass through to the consumer, and that accumulates and it causes all sorts of mayhem, including whacking the detox system of the liver. Taking the glutathione out, that whole mm-hmm. arm of the detox system is whacked. It wrecks our gut, you know. So I think it's pretty darn important. And it's the more we're learning about glyphosate residues, the more that scale needs to be, you know, up around a 9 or a 10.
Yeah, wow. So we would look upon this as, just my opinion, as kind of prevention and investing in your dog's health, so you don't have to spend... You know, the organic food is obviously cost more, but worth it.
Sure.
What
yeah. more? Better to spend it on prevention than it is to try to treat something that's chronically ill.
Yes, sir. Robin says a tick was found on a 15-week-old puppy and safely removed. She likely got it when she escaped our yard and ran into the green belt several weeks ago. Deer feed frequently behind our gates yards. Should we be concerned about one tick bite may have been on her for a few hours or so?
I would not. There tends to be a lot of fear around ticks and Lyme and that sort of thing, but you know, the average animal is going to beat that disease if they're in good health, get well fed, they're not mm-hmm. overly vaccinated, they're not getting poisoned every month for fleas and heartworms and things.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'll often see is they may develop a Lyme titer, meaning they've got some antibodies to Lyme if you live in an area where Lyme is a risk. Or some of these other things like Rocky Mountain spotted fever, depends where you live, what the ticks carry. But in general, a single tick or, you know, a few ticks here and there are not going to be the end of a dog. You know, they're going to develop immunity. If their terrain, if you focus on how healthy they are, the germ, the bad guy, becomes much less of a risk.
Mm-hmm. She says also okay to wait 19 weeks for the first, but yeah, she's right on it about what you said, right? It's a good age for the first rabies vax, right?
Yeah, anytime over 16.
Anytime over 16. I understand that natural immunity process for parvo and distemper for puppies, but what is your protocol for adopting older shelter dogs? Most shelters will vaccinate. What do you recommend going forward after the shelter has vaccinated the animal, and we don't know what they were even vaccinated before the shelter got it, right?
I wouldn't vaccinate those animals at all. They've been over-vaccinated, grossly over-vaccinated, especially if they bounced into one or more shelters. So the odds are, if you're curious, you can do a titer test for parvo and distemper
mm-hmm.
and rabies. If you're curious about those three, those are the ones that can kill animals. And odds are you'll find titers for all of them. In other words, antibodies will be there. And then that tells you you're done. Immunity lasts a long time. It's called duration of immunity. And the immunologist who I listen to, like Dr. Schultz, Ron Schultz, now retired, I guess, out of the University of Wisconsin, says immunity is likely to last for a lifetime.
Really?
So I wouldn't do those dogs again.
Final one for you. Is a raw food that follows the 80-10-10 or whole prey model ideal for dog or cat? Tell folks what the 80-10-10 model is. Do you know? I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I just get this one mixed up. I think it's 80 means 80% raw meaty bones.
Yes.
10 is organs. And I get the other 10 often mixed up.
I think the greens,
so
right?
Yeah.
Could it be the green?
I think it's a fine balance, yeah. And again, variety is important. So what I see people doing wrong is they'll lock on to one source of their protein source. You know, oh, my dog just loves this chicken, and we're doing it 80-10-10, and everything is good, or my dog just loves this beef or venison or whatever it is. You want to rotate those things.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a variety just like a wolf would get. And maybe every month, it doesn't have to be every day, if we're going to say, but every month, just change sources of protein.
Mm-hmm.
So you're mimicking that wild model that your dog descended from.
Folks, before we go, I want to give a really plug to a good friend. We don't have a financial interest, but Dr. Broderick, cornucopiapetfoods.com. He's been a vet, I think, 50 years now. He's got you by 10 years, Doc. And he has a completely, absolutely completely, every ingredient organic. It's in a can, but I think it would be a step up from kibble, the dried food, if you don't want to do raw. CornucopiaPetFoods.com. They have turkey and all kinds of things for dogs and cats. Absolutely organic. Pew! Everything, every ingredient. That's pretty cool, right? Pretty cool. But the ideal would be the raw, the right, Doc? I mean, if you can do that. Because just more going on with the raw
missing
meat.
What's missing in a can is life.
Life, yeah.
It's all dead.
Well, but it would still be better than kibble, wouldn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Big step up.
Yeah, because kibble, God knows how they do those things. I mean, they're trying, but they have to, I don't know what they do.
It's a completely foreign food for a dog.
Really?
Completely foreign. High pressure, high heat. You know, shot through a cannon, extruded.
And especially,
ingredients are
especially
horrible.
For the cats, too, it's hard on them, isn't it?
Oh, it's worse for cats.
Yeah.
Cats should never eat dry food. It's a anathema to their systems, which are water scavengers. You know, they get their water from their food. They don't typically drink.
So they like gooey food if you do the cat things. Well,
yeah,
Doc.
Yeah, raw food's the best.
Thanks for being here. Wow, this was great. We had a lot of questions. Good job. So the drug-free heartworm prevention sale, this goes on for just another 12 hours or so for One Radio Network listeners. And we're going to have the link right there you can click on. Now, this is a little course that they can sign up for now at a reduced rate and learn about the whole heartworm thing. But I'm sure they're going to come away with a whole lot of other cool things for their dogs and cats, right? Just in general.
Oh, yeah. It's much more than heartworm prevention.
Cool. And we'll have that on the show page. All right, my friend. Thank you. I love you. Thanks for being here. And we'll see
My
you.
Pleasure.
We'll keep in touch with you. You stay safe there in India because, you know, they got a lot of coffee and stuff like that out there. So be careful.
<That's great. laughs> Thanks for having me, Patrick. Yeah, I really appreciate
it. It's been an honor, sir. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Dr. Will Faulkner, our holistic veterinarian. So there's a whole bunch of really cool resources there for Dr. Faulkner at vitalanimal.com. And I think you can, even if you just go to the main website, you're going to find a /drug-free prevention May celebration sale that's going on for another 12 hours and 6 minutes. Boy, he's right on track here. 12, that's Central Time, midnight Central Time, so you might want to get involved in that. So that was fun. I hope this helps you out a little bit with the doggies and kitties. We're going to have fun tomorrow. Fred Dashefsky is going to be here at 9 o'clock Central Time, and it's going to be the real world of money, and this is the place to go if you want to buy gold and silver coins as well. 800-468-2646, uscoincapital.com. And then around 10 o'clock or 10:30, I think maybe 10 o'clock, Joe Salatin, the lunatic farmer. He's an interesting fellow. We haven't talked, it's been many years, and he has a new book out all about food and labels and stuff, and I'm sure we're going to have a good time with him, Joe Salatin, tomorrow. So Fred Dashefsky, Joe Salatin, please pass on all of these links to everyone that you care about. Like us on Facebook, and that spreads the word. Go on UB2B and like those, and feel free to put comments into the comment section for all of our shows on OneRadioNetwork.com. And remember, we have over, 3,000. We have over 3,000 hours, all free, all at no cost, audios of your, of our shows. Over 12 years. So put your fun little search engine things going on and put in thyroid or detox or milk thistle or whatever you want to do, and you're going to find a lot of shows going back 12 years that you've never heard from, that these are still very relevant. So use our search function at the upper right to do some research, and great resource there. I think probably 3,500 hours of resources from authorities all over the world. So I love you all very much. Thanks for everything. We will see you tomorrow. Fred Dashefsky and the Real World of Money. Let us know if we can help with anything. My email, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. See you in the morning. May the blessings be.
We are listener supported. One Radio Network.